The committee will come to order. Welcome to the Subcommittee on Watersheds, Wetlands, and Buffer Protection. Members will be filing in as they come in from lunch. We do have a fairly large agenda today, so I'm going to get started, and we'll consider the minutes as we get a quorum. Just a little bit on today. In the past meetings, we've heard from the Board of Water and Soil Resources a little bit. We've heard from Soil and Water Conservation Districts. We've heard from Watershed Districts. And today we have Dr. Shannon Fisher, Director for the Minnesota River Board, to talk a little bit about another example of multi-jurisdictional efforts on watershed protection. That'll be followed by Randy Kramer, John Jashke, and Steve Woods from the Board of Water and Soil Resources. They will be talking a little bit on ideas for the as a result of the Office of Legislative Audit Report, but also talk a little bit about other multi-jurisdictional ad hoc groups that are out there dealing with water. And if there's time, we may hear from the legislative auditor today, but I know there are many committees meeting, and members have lots of places to be. So we'll start right off with Dr. Fisher. Welcome to the committee. If you could introduce yourself for the record.
Thank you. My name is Shannon Fisher, and I'm the Executive Director of the Minnesota River Joint Powers Board. I'm also the Director of the Water Resource Center at Minnesota State University of Mankato, and I also hold a 50% appointment as an Assistant Professor of Biology at Minnesota State University of Mankato. Today I'd like to address the committee in regards to one of the other types of watershed management units that we have, and particularly in the larger basins across the state. I was going to start with just paraphrasing a statement that our board chair put out this past summer. In July of 2006, the Minnesota River Board took a step into the future with new vigor and purpose. The delegates made it clear that the days of simply getting by are in the past. By moving forward in a unified manner, we facilitate our progress that has allowed new opportunities to emerge, new partnerships to form, and new support mechanisms to be created. Now is the time for us to surge ahead. Our new leadership has created a new environment within the Minnesota River Board, giving us a more active and influential program in resource management of the Minnesota River Basin. The board, in conjunction with our many partners, is forging the way for Clean Water Legacy Act funding, nutrient trading, ongoing conservation program support, educational opportunities, stakeholder outreach, reduced rate workshops, and research projects and communications in the basin. These are exciting times for the board, times that we want to share with everyone. In your packets, there is a set of PowerPoint presentation slides that you can, to a certain degree, follow along with as I go through them today. I wanted to give a little bit of an introduction to kind of the foundation of the board and who we are. The Minnesota River Basin Joint Powers Board obviously represents our namesake river, the Minnesota River. And it is a large basin with 13 major watersheds, over 15,000 square miles of drainage, and it covers all or at least portions of 38 counties. In 1992, the Minnesota River Citizens Advisory Committee put forth a set of recommendations that called for managing drainage, improving land practices, monitoring water quality, and improving assistance to local government units. As part of that set of recommendations, we were asked to establish a Minnesota River Commission, a local joint powers board, or some equivalent to that. So as a part of that process, then in 1995, statutory language, who I believe was introduced by Senator Denny Fredrickson initially, created this 103F.378, the Minnesota River Basin Joint Powers Board. Which was originally created to collaborate and leverage in a judiciously appropriate manner, or in other words, promote balanced approaches and assume leadership and promotion of local government involvement on a county-based effort to promote and protect water quality. This was a big deal to the southern part of the state. The last slide on page one is a scanned copy of the front page of the Mankato Free Press, dated July 13, 1995. Ink flows into pact for cleanup of river, Carlson Hale's most important document in Minnesota history during ceremony. This was an important step for us. It allowed us to regain or at least refocus our efforts on grassroots and bottom-up approaches to local watershed management. And so therefore, the board was created and has been forging forward ever since. On the top of page two, the purpose of the mission, or the mission statement of the board is, the purpose of the Minnesota River Board is to provide leadership, build partnerships, and support efforts to improve and protect water quality in the Minnesota River Basin. Our vision has always been the preservation and restoration of the Minnesota River can only be achieved by a cooperative effort between citizens and all levels of government and business. And our goal has been to restore and preserve Minnesota River's recreation, habitat, and scenic beauty by leveraging existing resources at the local, state, and federal levels. So the board was never created, I don't think the intent was ever to create a board, a joint powers board, that was going to come in and dominate the scene. That was not the intent. The intent was to provide a mechanism for the counties to have input on how we are going to manage our watershed, and to provide an opportunity to for various levels of support for those watershed units. Our current executive committee includes five county commissioners. Bill Stangler from Le Sueur County is our current board chair. Judy Hansen from Nicollet County, Harold Solem from Lacaparle, Charlie Wheeler from Sibley, and John Schuler from Redwood. We have a staff of 0.65 FTE. That is the extent of what we have been able to muster financially. I think that we do a pretty good job of getting a lot of work done through partnership building and other work, considering that we have a very limited staff obligation. The board is organized, the bottom slide on page two is a little bit difficult to read on your printout, but we really function in kind of a three-tier or a three-part system. The board itself really tries to focus on the big picture policy and coordination issues. So for example, when the Clean Water Legacy funding came to a head during the last legislative cycle, the Board of Water and Soil Resources worked closely with the Minnesota River Board to help get the information out there, work on how we were going to get that information distributed, and worked a little bit with how we were going to look at applications from the Minnesota River Basin. We work on things like water plan integration. This is important because we have 37 counties, each writing their own water plan, and there are a lot of things that are similar and there are a lot of things that are dissimilar in those plans, and so it gives us an opportunity to take a look at those. We try to handle large, broad-based public relations and media issues. We work on policy, we work on large-scale conservation issues, and we try to provide as much assistance as we can to the watersheds in the basin. The other two pieces of the program that we have is our involvement with partner building and project building with the watershed programs. As I said before, there are 13 major watersheds in the valley, and they are all very active with the exception of one or two. And we try to do the best that we can to provide the technical resources and the financial resources in terms of assistance in grant writing and policy development for those groups. One of the big advantages the board has had over the last few years has been a relationship that they forged with the other half of my job, which is the Water Resource Center at Minnesota State Mankato. We have resources that have really advanced and helped the Minnesota River Board promote themselves and promote their agenda in regards to public outreach, programming, providing workshops and conferences, and this has all been very important to the effort. On the top of page three, one of the big activities, I came on with the Minnesota River Board in April of 2005, and one of the primary activities that I had, I guess what I charged myself with, was to take the board through a statutory review and really take a look at what it is the board was built or created to do and what we have been doing. And so late in 2005 and into 2006, we developed a procedures guide and strategic plan that really was a statutory review of where we are at. We looked at our major obligations based in the statute, which include coordination of comprehensive cleanup goals, development and use of monitoring and data management systems, conducting public meetings, provision of informational and educational programs, provision of progress reports and budget proposals, advising project development, administration of implementation funds, and maintenance of membership requirements and duties. the general consensus is that on about 75 to 80% of these, I think we've done a pretty good job. There are a couple, though, here that obviously need some work. And in the full report, which I do have copies of if anybody is interested, we lay out where we identified our own deficiencies, and we lay out a plan on how we are going to rectify those over the next four to five years. With that said, though, the Minnesota River Board has had a lot of progress, and I believe we have been relatively results-oriented. The Procedures Guide and Strategic Plan was a very important step in the right direction for us. But also, we've been heavily involved in the Clean Water Legacy Act funding initiative. We have been trying very much so to assist the agencies and the legislature in getting the information out to the appropriate individuals that are involved and helping them apply for the money if they were not an eligible applicant. As a Joint Powers Board, we were allowed to apply for funds on behalf of groups in the basin, and we did submit 8 applications in the last round on behalf of our constituents, totaling over $6 million worth of applications. We were successful on a couple of those, and I'll highlight those momentarily. We're also working hard with a large-scale group working on some nutrient trading work and some DMP challenge opportunities. This is an NRCS-funded grant, and again, I'll talk about that in a little bit. You can kind of look over the list there on the middle slide on page 3, and I think that the progress and results that the board has exhibited as a Joint Powers Board has been quite good. I think what I'd rather do, though, is spend a few minutes talking about a couple of our more specific projects on how we've approached our involvement in the basin. And on the bottom of page 3, I think one of our shiny examples that we are currently working on is with the City of Lake Crystal. We were approached by the City of Lake Crystal and Blue Earth County, along with some Middle Minnesota River watershed stakeholders who are not well represented in any of the other state major watersheds. As a result of that, the Minnesota River Board and the Water Resource Center, in conjunction with these partners, generated Clean Water Legacy Act proposals and also generated a 319 proposal to the Minnesota Pollution Control Agency. We had a number of state, local, and private partners on this project, and as a result, we did secure almost $320,000 on behalf of the City of Lake Crystal. I use this as kind of our shining example. This is how it should work. The Minnesota River Board is really geared towards and prepared to help these communities and help these counties do projects like this, and it's exactly how we should be functioning. Another example is the Middle Minnesota River watershed. It is an area that does not have a well-defined boundary. It is an area with a lot of short, little, direct, down, very steep ravine type of inputs into the river, and it's an area that is not well represented. We again, on behalf of a number of counties and stakeholders in the Middle Minnesota, submitted a Clean Water Legacy Act proposal this last year, and we did receive $365,000 of funding for that group as well. And so that's another example of what I would consider a good success and a good example of what the Minnesota River Board can do. The Minnesota River Summit is another example. We partnered with the Pollution Control Agency along with quite a number of other agencies and counties, private groups such as Clean Up the Minnesota River, or Coalition for a Clean Minnesota River, I'm sorry, and Clean Up the River Environment. And we did partner in a Minnesota River Summit that was attended by more than 180 participants in January in New Ulm. We had invited a large number of legislators to this, but unfortunately, you started session early, and we couldn't get very many of you there, but we did get a few people to come and be represented, including some federal legislators, some federal congressional representatives. A couple of other examples of how a Joint Powers Board like ours can work is to take in, I'm sorry,
Representative Manzo.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Fisher. we're very busy people, but a lot of us are acutely aware of and concerned about the river. Last night, if you were here, the author of the bill mentioned the late, great Representative Willard Munger. And if Representative Munger were here today at the table, I think he'd want me to ask you, how are we doing, and how much better is the river today than when we started this initiative and what needs to be done to carry it to fruition.
Mr. Chair. The river is showing signs of improvement. It is a slow process. It received a significant amount of neglect over 100 years or 150 years. And the Minnesota River, the State of the River Report, I think, is one of the better observational mechanisms we have to at least track how things are going. There is an establishing network of water quality monitoring sites on the river, and we're starting to finally get to the point where we have enough long-term data that we can start to at least look at some of the impacts that we might be having by our various conservation efforts. One of the things that I would say is that there is substantial progress in certain watersheds where conservation initiatives have been more successful than others. I don't think there's any question about that. You can take a look at, say, you know, up in the Renville County area, for example. There has been a significant effort there to install conservation reserve acres and a significant effort there to improve their drainage program. And a lot of that has to do with the drive and motivation of local staff who have done a real outstanding job there. And as a result, we can show data that show that we are having an impact and that sediment and nutrients in that particular sub or major watershed are improving. So.
Willard would want me to make sure that we're making progress.
Okay.
Continue.
Okay. One of the projects on the top of page 4 I just wanted to highlight very quickly is a nutrient trading and management initiative that we're working on. This is funded through an NRCS grant in conjunction with AgFlex Corporation, which is primarily a for-profit company based out of Wisconsin that works on nutrient management and other agricultural initiatives. One of the things that we're trying to do with this is work with a wide variety of partners, including the producers that are on the landscape, to develop some criteria on how we're going to set up a potential nutrient trading network here in the state of Minnesota. The Minnesota Pollution Control Agency is starting to develop policy on how they would do this, and we feel it's very important that watersheds as a whole be involved. A couple of other ones there that I'll just brush over real quickly is CREP fundraising. Contrary maybe to popular belief, CREP 1 is not completely dead yet. There are still some federal dollars out there that could be claimed, and we have been working as a partner with the Minnesota River Watershed Alliance and others to raise funds to secure a few more of those acres. And so far we have raised more than $250,000. We are also working with the McKnight Foundation to increase and streamline communications in the basin. This has been a very important topic of conversation amongst a wide variety of the watershed groups that don't feel necessarily connected as they should, and so this is an area that we have been working on. Moving on to a few comments that from the Joint Powers Board perspective on the Watershed Management OLA report, I just wanted to comment very briefly on the three major findings and kind of lend my support to some of the conclusions that were made. The first one is the complex management scenario. The Minnesota River Basin would certainly fall into this situation. We have 13 major watersheds, 38 SWCDs, 38 county water plans, in addition to the board, three very active non-government organizations that are doing a lot of work on the ground. We have more than 15 active clean water partnerships. In addition, we have the Area 2 control projects, agency programs, municipal and federal efforts, and a variety of ongoing private efforts. And so I would certainly agree that it is a complex management scenario. Performance is mixed, and we would certainly agree with that in the basin. There are a couple of scenarios where performance has been quite poor, and it is frustrating to those groups who are doing a good job that they are reflected upon poorly by those that are not doing a good job. And I would certainly consider that to be a major point of concern and contention amongst the various watershed groups. The other one is state oversight, on the issue of whether state oversight is inadequate. I think one of the concerns that we have, and we as the Minnesota River Board feel stymied by this to a certain extent too, is the lack of authority to actually oversee. And I noticed in the report on a number of occasions that was one of the comments that was made on, if the Board of Water and Soil Resources was doing a good enough job. The question is, did they have enough authority to do a good job? And as a Minnesota River Board constituent, I would say that it's very difficult for them to do a good job when they don't have direct oversight or explicit oversight of some of these various groups. The other concern is that a number of the groups that are involved, and particularly some of the watershed projects, they are clean water partnerships, and they're not receiving funding from the Board of Water and Soil Resources. They're primarily receiving funding from the Pollution Control Agency. And so how the Pollution Control Agency fits into this oversight picture, I think, is another consideration that we should probably think about. The other one is that when you start talking about an area the size of the Minnesota River Basin, as we are in so many of our disciplines in the state, the staff are stretched very thin. But I also think that we have to be ready to act when a problem is identified. And I think there have been a few situations where problems are apparent. But again, I think it boils back to what authority do we have to act upon those problems once we identify them. So there are a few comments I wanted to provide to the group today in terms of the Minnesota River Board's perspectives on improving watershed management, at least in our basin. And a couple of these, I just listed them out on the bottom of page 4, but a couple of them that I really wanted to point out is the watershed approach. Managing watersheds is difficult at best when you throw political boundaries such as counties, townships, basin lines on there. But the watershed approach is really an important one, and you can accomplish so much more by managing them as watershed units. Partnerships with explicit authority is another one that I think is very important. It's easy to build partnerships, but when no one seems to have any explicit oversight or authority over these particular groups, it becomes very difficult to develop and set criteria on whether or not performance is sufficient. And so therefore, I think explicit authority explanations need to be given. Balanced strategies are always important. I find the Minnesota River Board serving in many regards as a neutral entity in the basin. We are friends to everyone, enemies to everyone, depending on which situation and time of year. But I think we do find ourselves trying to serve that neutral common ground capacity. We want to be cognizant of the plight of the farmers and of the landowners, but we also need to be cognizant of the fact that there are some significant environmental concerns that need to be addressed.
Dr. Fisher, if you could just wait a second. I would note that a quorum is present, and I'm going to ask if Representative Anzelis has reviewed the minutes.
So moved.
The minutes. Are there any discussion on the minutes? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Those are approved.
Thank you. A couple of other ones that I think that your OLA report does address is funding with accountability. I think that has been an ongoing issue with some groups. Other groups do a very good job in the basin of being accountable for the money that they spend, but others have struggled in that regard. I think another thing that could be done, or another suggestion, is continued use or enhancement of the use of the joint powers boards or other board type of authorities. For example, you have groups in the Red River Basin, such as the Red River Board. You have groups in the Southeast, and you have groups like the Minnesota River Joint Powers Board. And I don't think that the potential and the use of these groups has been fully realized to help manage some of the local capacities and local issues. One of the other things that I think is very critical here is taking a look at how we're operating in terms of our soil and water conservation districts. Here again, I don't have any issues with how the soil and water conservation districts are operating, with the exception of maybe a couple that I think need to take a look at how they're conducting business. But for the most part, these are county boundaries, and it becomes very difficult to manage a watershed across county boundaries. And so I noticed in the OLA report that it talked about some restructuring of that process. And I think if we were to take an SWCD and instead of having it be the Blue Earth County SWCD, have it be the Blue Earth Watershed SWCD, I just think that there would be so much good that could come from that. And I think it would really help streamline the effort, and it would also reduce a lot of the overlap and replication of services that many of these groups provide. One of the things involved with that, though, is if you look across Minnesota and you see pockets of success in our conservation efforts, I would say in a vast majority of those scenarios, it is related to the availability and the retention of good quality staff. You can find good people out there who do very good work, and those people need to be retained. It's very important. During the ditch buffer study that we worked on, for example, we put up a map of some areas where we had high concentrations of buffers in place and buffers that were actually installed and working. And one of the things that I saw in that was you could identify certain concentrations in areas where we know we have effective staff working working on those projects. One of the other important ones is to continue our outreach program as well. We need to keep working on providing the training that these folks need, and that's another role that I think that a large kind of overarching entity such as the board can provide. So on the top of page 5, I just wanted to comment that, you know, the board is active, and joint powers boards such as ours can be very active, but we would like to do a lot more. We are, as I said, we are a staff of less than 3/4 FTE, and I think we accomplish a lot with what we have, but we would like to do a lot more. I think there's so much we could do with county water plant integration and grant assistance. I look at those examples like the Lake Crystal project, and without our assistance, that project would not have gotten off the ground, and I think we could do a lot more of that type of work. Before I conclude, I had a PowerPoint presentation developed, and so the pie charts won't mean much to you, so I'm going to kind of skip around here, but on the top of page 5, I have just a little comment there that says, the survey says residents want it done faster. We conducted a resident survey in conjunction with a couple of the agencies in 2005, and I just wanted to point out a few of the highlights of that survey. So on the top of page 6, the residents in the Minnesota River Basin do understand that their river is polluted. 80% said it was somewhat or very polluted. In addition, when we talk about how fast it will be take to clean up the river versus how fast it should take to clean up the river, on the top of page 7, there's a couple of discussion points. 80% think cleanup will take greater than 5 years, and almost that same amount said they think it should take less than 5 years. They want it done faster. They realize that it is going to take a while, but they have expressed a strong interest in getting the job done more quickly. One of the interesting parts is we asked a question that just simply wanted to get at, do residents in these watersheds feel that they have an obligation for future generations on water quality? And the numbers were higher than I was expecting, and 96% in this survey indicated that yes, they do feel that they have a responsibility for that. What was also interesting, I'm now in the middle of page 8, I'm jumping ahead here, was we asked the residents in these watersheds, where do you think the problem is coming from? And we gave them a series of choices, such as agriculture, industry, shoreland development, you know, wastewater, sewage. And what was interesting is about 20% said agriculture, about 16% said industry, and about 34% on their own came up with, well, it's a combination of the above. So the residents are smarter than we probably give them credit for, and they realize that it's not just a single source. It's going to take municipal folks working together with ag, and that it's going to take everybody to get the job done. Now, the other question that I'll close with here then is we asked them, how much would you be willing to pay? The Minnesota River Board has struggled with coming up with a stable source of funding. The counties have been contributing, but as we know, local property taxes only go so far, and so it has been a struggle to obtain funding. And we have talked in the basin about trying to replicate the Red River type of scenario with watershed districts, and having each of the watershed districts provide some financial contributions to the overarching entity. Watershed districts are difficult to form. They're not popular in areas where they haven't been there before. But what's of interest is that we asked these same folks what they would be willing to pay, and there was a significant number of them that said that they would be willing to pay at least something. 48% said, hey, I would at least pay something. I'm not saying it's going to be $100 a year or $500 a year, but they felt that it was appropriate for them to pay and contribute to the river's cleanup efforts. There are roughly, I believe, 800 and some thousand households in the Minnesota River Basin, and we had done an assessment a few years ago that just simply indicated that if there were about $5 per household collected on an annual basis, it would be enough to stabilize a watershed support staff for the Minnesota River Board and each of the 13 major watersheds. And that is where a lot of these folks probably find themselves struggling, is that they tend to fight the fight on where's my next paycheck going to come from, because it's all soft money programs. And so they find themselves really struggling in that regard. So I think, you know, in the end, the Minnesota River Board, I think, has a lot of potential to do some good things for this basin. And we're only one entity like this. There are others across the state that are these broad, overarching joint powers boards and or some other type of county coalition. And I think that they're an additional value to the overall watershed management approach. So that is all I had.
Thank you, Dr. Fisher. Any questions? Is that what it is?
You can talk about what I would just intuitively think is the importance of this association with the university. Do you want to talk about that?
Yeah, Mr. Chair. The relationship with the university has been a very good one to forge. It has been extremely valuable to the board. It has been extremely valuable to the university. The advantage there, again, is that the university shares that neutral ground image that the board also, I believe, all shares. The university also provides a very important structural backbone for groups like the board because of simple infrastructure needs. So for example, there are a lot of contracts and grant promotions and conferences and various things that the university can provide expertise on helping develop. And it is basically at no cost to the board because it's part of the job of the university to provide those services. And so it has been an extremely valuable relationship, and it has really helped stabilize both the Water Resource Center at the university as well as the Minnesota River Board.
Ms. Virginius?
Are there any duplicates of you in any of the other university or colleges?
Mr. Chair, there are a couple of other water resource centers in the MNSCU system. We operate quite differently than the Water Resource Center at the University of Minnesota, for example. They are very research and grant based, whereas we tend to be more service and contract based. And a matter of fact, we are currently operating between the Minnesota River Board and the Water Resource Center combined. We're now operating about 18 to 20 different projects on behalf of the Board of Water and Soil Resources, Department of Natural Resources, Pollution Control Agency, and others. In terms of whether there are other people like me or other situations like ours, there is a small water resource center at Winona, and I believe there's also one in St. Cloud and one in Bemidji. But structurally, they are not nearly as active as the Mankato office is, simply because of the fact that they do not have designated faculty to operate those centers. So most of those are operating as full-time faculty in one of the departments and trying to do a little bit of water resource center management on the side. And that's been one of my, I guess, observations over the last 2 years, has been as I look at various watershed management groups and units, and I look to see who's been successful, there's one factor that just stands out, and it's those groups that have a designated person who can dedicate a full-time job to that position. I see a number of these that just kind of struggle along, and one of the biggest downfalls that they have is that they're kind of like me. They hold a 0.5 position as a Water Resource Center Director, a 0.5 position as a faculty in biology, and a 0.5 position as the Executive Director of the Minnesota River Board. And we're pulled in too many directions.
Any other questions? Thank you, Dr. Fisher. If you could maybe provide contact information. I just looked at the materials, and I don't know if there's a website or a phone number if members wanted to contact you. You can do that with staff.
Okay.
Okay, next we have Randy Kramer, Chair of the Board of Water and Soil Resources, John Jashke, Executive Director, and Steve Woods, Assistant Director for the Board of Water and Soil Resources.
Good afternoon, Mr. Chairman. We asked if we could give a quick overview of some of the other organizations, a couple of them that Dr. Fisher mentioned that have a watershed approach as a responsibility across the state. I won't go through all of them. At some point, it might be valuable to have a map and we can go through in more detail what each of them focuses on. Dr. Fisher did mention the Red River Watershed Management Board, and they are in the Minnesota side of the Red River in northwestern Minnesota. They are a group of watershed districts that have joined together to manage primarily flooding, but also other water management issues. And they have a system where they collect revenue via the watershed levy and share a portion of it across the entire watershed, the whole basin, to be able to manage the main stem flooding. There's another organization up in that same area, the Red River Basin Commission, which is a group of North Dakota, Minnesota, and Manitoba interests to manage the entire basin on an international interstate basis to do similar things. They're much more of a coordinating entity, whereas the Red River Board in Minnesota is more of a financing and doing projects entity. Of course, they do planning as well. There are also a number of watershed organizations that are formed as joint powers of counties. One that's actually in the Minnesota River, formed quite some time ago, the Redwood Cottonwood Rivers Control Area, which manages the two rivers that are in their name, the Redwood and Cottonwood Rivers. There's also a Snake River Watershed Organization that's in central Minnesota that has a setup that's very similar with a group of counties managing on a watershed basis. The Mississippi Headwaters Board is a little bit different. They were set up to do more of the zoning issues related to the river corridor. They're not a watershed organization, but they do manage a corridor along the Mississippi River through the area in north central Minnesota from Morrison County northward. And there are also private nonprofit organizations that have convened and organized to manage on a watershed basis. The Cannon River Watershed Partnership is probably the primary example of that, where they've managed the Cannon River over a six-county area in south, central, and southeastern Minnesota. They are dependent on grant funding because they do not get direct money from the state, and they do not collect any, of course, money via any levy authority. So there's a variety of these. You know, there's kind of two categories. The joint powers agreements where the existing governments come together to manage things on a watershed basis, and there are the nonprofits that are set up to do that without a direct government connection, but are often reliant upon government funding to do a lot of their work. And they've formed for various reasons at different times. I think a few of them have been given special attention in the legislative audit report, or at least a supplement to that report that might give us more of the details if you care to see that as well. And I know those staff will be talking after we're done. Quick overview, just to know that there's a great number of these organizations, especially in greater Minnesota. In the metropolitan area, we have a different system, and Steve Woods is here. He's the state expert in that area, and at some point at a future meeting, we'll probably go into more detail on that. So that's just a quick summary of the statewide approach that's been taken in several different places. And with that, we thought we would go back to the agenda and talk a little bit about the agency's response and readiness for the report that you'll be hearing about in a little bit. And with me is the chairman of our board, Randy Kramer. I'll have him introduce himself and present his testimony.
Mr. Kramer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, members. I am Randy Kramer. I'm the chair of the Board of Water and Soil Resources. I'm one of the three members, citizens members, appointed by the governor. I'm an active farmer from Renville County, growing corn, soybeans, sugar beets, peas, and sweet corn. And I'd like to thank you for the opportunity to address the committee today. It wasn't short notice, but I was able to change my schedule and be here, so I appreciate it again. In general, I believe that the program audits are a good review and process of, and the programs, and I commend the OLA on their report as it was well done. I'd like to comment on two of the issues and report that the board and I see as our main differences in the recommendation from the OLA report. The first being is the issue of the appointment of the executive director by the governor or the hiring by the board. When I was appointed by Governor Pawlenty as a member, a citizen's member in July of 2003, I had no preconceived notion as how the appointment process should work, but after going through the hiring process of our new executive director, John Jaske, As you all met, probably in January, just starting this appointment on January 22nd, we, the board, feel it's essential that the Board of Water and Soil Resources hire the executive director. In the hiring process, we had 36 applicants, and we were able to choose a candidate that reflects the views and the goals of the state of Minnesota and the Board of Water and Soil Resources. In the report, I found no context that supported the summary findings of the appointed executive director, but in the text found contrary opinion. The report stated that we did not find evidence that board members acted inappropriately to overtly impede Moser's executive director or his staff. The board and I feel that the system is not broken. Why fix it? The second difference that we have with the OLA report is a recommendation that the board act in advisory role only. With the three local soil and water conservation district board members, three watershed district board members, three county commissioner board members, and three citizens members, along with five agency members, that being the DNR, MDA, MDH, MPCA, and the University of Minnesota Extension, all appointed by the governor, we feel that we represent local citizens of the state of Minnesota, along with their views and goals of the state. We feel we are the board of the choice for private landowners of the state of Minnesota and represent 78% of the private lands in the state. If the board acted in an advisory role only, having no decision authority, why would state agency members participate? How would local government and citizens participate? Our present system is working well, so why change it? As I stated before, the OLA report is a very good process and needed function of government. We all learn from the report, and it's a great checks and balance system. I can assure you that the full board will review the report and develop the necessary changes to address the findings within the report. Mr. Chairman, thank you again for the opportunity to address the committee. The Board of Water and Soil Resources, including myself, are up to the challenge and look forward to working with the legislature and the governor's office to implement any changes or suggestions which you may have. Again, I would like to turn over the floor back to Executive Director John Jaski.
Mr. Jaski.
Mr. Chairman, members, I'm not going to go into any detail. I think you want them to have the legislative audit folks so have a chance. And so we're back in front of your subcommittee quite regularly, so we'll plan to do that. We just wanted to follow up on the chairman's remarks that, you know, we're ready to come up with some specific ideas about how to improve the oversight functions that our agency currently has but may need to expand, both in terms of the resources available for it as well as any potential authorities that might need to be changed to do that. And so we'll be back with some more details at some point down the road.
Representative Anzels.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman and Mr. Jaski. As you might expect, coming from a background in county government, I have a tendency to ask questions about the partnership between state agencies and local folks. I asked a question about that at our previous hearing and will continue as we deal with this issue. The other part of this, that's been my experience, I don't believe I've ever seen a report from the legislative auditor that does not reference it is the legislature's responsibility to ensure that the agency have adequate resources to carry out its responsibilities. Would you care to respond to that second button that I have?
Mr. Representative, two things. One is, before I came to this position, 3-4 weeks ago, I was a county employee, so I've got that perspective still with me. And on to your point, clearly local governments have to be involved in water management. I think there's no question about it. They have land use authority, which is very much tied to what our water resources look like. It's dependent on what our land uses are and how they're handled by citizens. And that's the other point I want to make, is that local governments are that connection to citizens on a regular basis, and we need to make sure that state-local balance is kept intact. To your point about resources, the information that I was able to get from the legislative staff who prepared it was that our agency has had an 11% reduction over the past three bienniums. And so we've had limited resources even for the mandates that we currently have. And in your packet, we passed around an agency overview. And I think it's fair to say that report that the legislative audit prepared was looking at a very narrow slice of our responsibility. It did not look at our wetland conservation, our regulatory programs, our wetland banking, our easements, our grants programs. And so with limited resources or declining resources and limited authority, it's a challenging task to try and take on something that's above and beyond.
Appreciate your candor.
Thank you. Representative Wagenius.
Yes. Thank you. You referenced that you would have some suggestions at some point in time. What point in time is that?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wagenius, if you give us a target, we'll aim for it and get something ready. We've had some preliminary thoughts about it, and here's the 5 points that I've been thinking about along with some of our staff. We have not had a chance to have our board engaged in this. We haven't yet had a meeting from the time the report was released until the next meeting next week. But we believe that the oversight needs to be preemptive so that we can get in there and find problems before they become bigger problems. We can't just rely on passively receiving annual reports and expect that we're going to see all of the things we need to see. It needs to be systematic so that we're doing it regularly and that it's expected that we'll be doing it so the locals that are performing these water management functions know that we're going to be doing some evaluation. It needs to be constructive so that when we go in there and provide that oversight and review, that we can recognize the uniquenesses of each place, because every part of the state's got differences from the other, and that we've got a means to chart a path towards improvement as part of that outcome. We have to have some consequences. There are some potentially in place now with grant dollars and so forth. We may have to look at some way to make sure that our consequences are proportionate to any deficiencies that aren't corrected. And finally, we've got to be transparent so that citizens and others can both participate in watershed management as well as understand what the organizations that are doing it are trying to accomplish and be held accountable to that. So that's some of the preliminary thinking we've had, but we'll be ready to bring you more specifics as soon as you can give us a target date to do that.
Representative Wagenius.
Well, I think the chair will have a target date in mind. I don't have that in mind. I am looking at the recommendations made by Dr. Fisher and talking about the watershed approach, using joint powers and basins, and all that's intuitively good. What is the stumbling block that's been keeping that from happening? And do you have a role in removing those stumbling blocks and making sure that happens? Or
Mr. Dashman, Mr. Representative Wagenius, in the case of the Minnesota River Board, I think as Dr. Fisher indicated, we don't have any prescribed responsibility. Certainly, as each of those counties has a water management plan that they're responsible for, at least they've all taken on that responsibility. It is voluntary because the money that comes with it is tied to that, but they've all elected to do that. And so our role has been a coordination role. Because they're a voluntary group of counties that got together to manage water on a watershed basis, and so there's no additional oversight that comes with their voluntary joining together. Some of the challenges are, I think scale is a big factor. When you got that big of an area, trying to make sure it all is coordinated is a challenge. I think the folks in the Red River Valley have maybe had a clear mission and purpose from the beginning, which was flood control, and they've been able to evolve that further, although they've still got some of their own challenges too in trying to figure out how to share the revenues, for example, that go to the main stem flood control versus the revenues that will go to flood control upstream and so forth. So coordination is a big part of it. In fact, if we're able to do some more efforts in oversight, I think focusing on the coordination among those local authorities is really a big part of it.
Representative Wagenius.
I think my question is a little bit different. It seems that we don't have that many watersheds. How many? Maybe I'm making the wrong assumption here, but it seems to me we need more watershed districts, and we're not covering the state with our watershed districts. And that was the stumbling block I was looking for. What's the stumbling block there?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Wagenius, a watershed district is one form of managing on a watershed basis. It is established primarily to do a plan and to also collect revenue specific to that area to manage water in that area. And we have watershed districts that run quite a large difference in terms of scale. you know, from some very small ones in the metropolitan area to some very large ones in the Red River Valley. And again, they're formed for a specific purpose. Often it's because the existing or the other governments that are managing water there have found that that's the best means to achieve their goals, or they've determined that they aren't capable or ready to do it with the existing governance. And we've seen that most recently in a watershed that's being formed potentially down in the southern part of the state, where it's a two-county area, and Mr. Chairman could probably talk about it a little bit more, but it's two counties that could manage it to some extent on their own, but they're looking for a unique financing mechanism to do projects for that watershed. And that's the primary reason driving that formation of that watershed district. So it varies from place to place. Every situation's got its unique characteristics and issues.
Thank you, Mr. Dashke. I do have a couple of questions. I'm just going to ask if Mr. Nobles would have the opportunity to maybe come back at another point in time if this does roll a little bit here, and if other members come back. Chair Kramer, I wanted to go back to the issue about appointments, and I know over the years there have been, and I believe there's a bill in already this year to add township government to the Bowser Board. Township members, I think in the past there have been proposals to add agricultural organization members. It kind of ebbs and flows. The first question is, what do you think is the optimum size for the Board of Water and Soil Resources, and then perspectives on membership?
Mr. Chairman, I guess I think it's up to your body to decide, but as a feeling, I think that 17 is adequate or more than adequate. It gets cumbersome in putting committees together, dealing with the different situations, keeping the board informed. I think that's the biggest thing, communication. And we want to have an active board. We are responsible for a lot of different things, and so to keep everyone in the loop. And I think it works well because of the appointments, as I stated in my comments, plus the five agency members that do belong, because they are voting members and they do have a say. So it makes them come to the table, and they are present. And so I think it works well at this point. And I did see the bill as introduced. It says one person from the cities and one from the townships. And so we'll deal with it if it comes, but we don't have an opinion on the actual size. I think it's adequate where it's at, and it can get too big and too cumbersome.
The five agency members are confirmed by the Senate for their jobs. Any observation on either Senate confirmation for the executive director or other members of the board?
Well, I think the present plan is the best, but as you heard my comments, I think that the chair, my job is also confirmed by the Senate, appointed by the governor, but the Senate does do the okay. And I also sit on as a member of the ECB board when you are chair of the Bowser board.
And then the follow-up on the board membership, is there an informal distribution by region or a formal distribution by region around the state?
It's a formal, they have to come out of the area, an area prescribed, and has to be, if we're looking for a watershed district person or soil water conservation person, they have to have their applications in, and then it goes through the governor's office for the appointment process, and they go through the interview process, background checks, things like that to come forward. And that's, we don't see any of that until the person is named, and that'd be the first that we would see who would be appointed.
And are there any term limits on board membership?
There are no, by bylaws, there are, Mr. Chairman, there are no term limits, but as a practice, they've only given a term of two terms of 4 years. So we've had some that served 9 years because they fulfilled the board member that either has went on or resigned or did something else, and so. But 8 years has been pretty much the maximum that we've had of board members.
And then currently, do you have any vacancies on the board today?
Mr. Chairman, there are no vacancies today. There are three of us that are up for reappointment: one citizens member, one watershed district member, and one soil water conservation district member, or county commissioner, excuse me.
Okay. Any other questions for Mr. Kramer and Mr. Dashke? and I think we'll follow up and try to get some more detail worked out. Mr. Nobles and your staff, if you could maybe do the 5-minute overview and
Chairman, members, my name is Jim Nobles. I'm the legislative auditor. With me is Jan Sandberg and David Kirchner. They both worked on this evaluation, and I know time's limited. And I think we've really come down to what is the most controversial issue in the report, and so maybe I'll just quickly address that, and it's governance. And we came to that issue in two ways. One is just looking at the structure of Bowser's governance is quite different than any other organization than what you see in the executive branch, where by your choice in law, typically you have the governor much more accountable and in charge of an executive branch agency, whether it's the Department of Education, Human Services, Transportation, and on, the governor has much more accountability for the operations and policies of those organizations. In this, it's quite indirect, as was just explained. There's appointments of the board, but not of the executive director. So we thought just on paper that that did not follow the typical model that we have for an organization in the executive branch of Minnesota state government. But I think we came to the issue also from the facts that we found. And what we found is what we think to be a reluctance on the part of Bowser to take a strong oversight role of local organizations. And so I think what we would point to is the absence of things from Bowser that you read in our report, and that is judgments about where we're strong and where we're weak. We think that should be a role for Bowser to do those kinds of evaluations. I think they have that knowledge because they work with local organizations all the time, but they're extremely reluctant to share that information. They shared it with us, but only privately. I don't think they would share it with you publicly, but it is on the record now, and I think that demonstrates in a very tangible way what is missing from Bowser, and that is accountability for the money that goes to the local level. I think everybody that has appeared before you and other committees has stipulated that there's mixed performance at the local level. We need local organizations, and we need them to be effective to protect the water. But some are not strong. Some are quite ineffective. And we need a plan to deal with that rather than sitting on the sidelines and saying, yes, we have mixed performance. We need to do something about it. The state needs to do something about it, as well as local people. So, Mr. Chairman, I think that's our position, and we'd be happy to answer any questions.
Representative McGinnis?
Well, thank you, Mr. Noble. Let me take this more practical problem that I see, and let's work through some problem solving here. When I talk to state agencies and ask them, how was it that our waters ended up in such bad shape? They said, well, the locals don't do their job. And if you're having another conversation later on and saying, well, you know, you want a huge amount of money for clean water legacy. It's not in the governor's bill, but you want this money, and I think we're all committed to cleaning up waters. And you ask the agency, well, agencies, well, how are you going to use all this money? And they say, we're going to give it to locals. So I think I am left with this. What do we do when we have the folks who are going to have the money giving it to people that they already think are not effective and having no other way to do problem solving here? So it's hard to say, oh, we should come up with a huge amount of money, which I know we need to do, and I know we need to do problem solving, but we don't have the structure in which to put the money, is what I guess what I'm thinking. And is that how you are identifying the problem?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Aguinas, I think that's as good a statement of the problem as I've ever heard, and that is we need to clean up our waters. It is going to take money, but we don't, we believe, have, and I think a lot of others believe, that we don't have in place the structure that achieves the kind of results that we need. We don't have as good accountability as we need. And so, yes, I think before we launch too quickly into spending a lot more money, we need to make sure it's going to be used effectively. I think we need two things to work better than they do now, and that's oversight and accountability. That's really what this is about. I think we're all agree that we have problems with water. The water is one of our most important resources. There's a job to be done that we're not doing as well as we need to, but we need to fix the structure. Now, we focus on Bowser. Bowser's not the only piece here. And frankly, you know, as we presented our report to some organizations, they pointed to the need for greater oversight and accountability at the local level by local officials, and I certainly wouldn't argue with that. You will hear some people say that county boards don't appoint people who are really committed to cleaning up the water, and something needs to be done about that. So I think there are many pieces of this puzzle, and but we point to one that is very tangible and I think is within your hands to do something about this year.
The second problem I think I observed and don't know enough, only know enough to be dangerous here, is that we have multiple agencies doing the same task. In other words, putting out money to deal with shoreline, for example. I think PCA does that. I think DNR does that. I think Bowser does that. And it doesn't seem effective to me. Did you all pick that up as you were working through?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Borghinius, yes, we did. You know, our focus was on watershed management, and we looked both at the local level, but at the state level as well. And again, I think everybody who's ever looked at this issue will say that there is a great deal of fragmentation at the state level. And we do address that. We have options. But, you know, just this morning, I was dealing with an issue that was brought to me from our investigative staff about a grant that was given to a watershed organization, but not from Bowser, but again, from another state agency, in this case, DNR. And those grants are often administered very differently. Some on a just here's the money basis, others on a reimbursement basis. So we're kind of all over the map in our systems for even just putting money out from the state to local watershed management organizations. So maybe my colleagues want to address a little bit more about what we saw and recommend, at least in terms of options, to be considered at state agencies.
If I could just interrupt, because I know that Representative Hoppe has a question too, and maybe it's so we could just economize time. So Representative Hoppe.
Chair, and Mr. Nobles, you kind of answered my question. You mentioned oversight and accountability, and then you amplified on that. And that was my question. Is it a state thing? Do we need DNR and PCA and Bowser and everybody more centralized accountability? Are we looking local? Is it a combination? Is it all of these things? You've already kind of answered that, so I'm
sorry. Well, then I'll let Sandberg.
Chair Hansen, I'm Jan Sandberg, Legislative Auditor's Office. I'll just put a piece in and David may wish to answer it. In the policy options section of our report, there are two sections that deal with consolidation, one at the state level, one at the local level. The state level is getting at the state agency issues that you're bringing up. And the local level may get at some of the issues that I think Representative Wagenius was raising a little bit earlier. That's and in the previous presentation, do you do things on a watershed basis, a county basis? How do those two pieces fit together? And so we do not come up with a specific recommendation, but we do discuss the pros and cons of those because they're extraordinarily complex and they deal with the federal government as well as state and local government also. I don't know, David, do you want to?
I'll just mention.
State your name.
I'm sorry. My name is David Kushner. I'm also with the Legislative Auditor's Office. I also worked on this report. One observation that was made to us in the course of this report that I will pass along is that there, generally speaking, there's an awful lot of concern about coordination among state agencies that's often raised, and yet, generally speaking, there is very rarely any money or resources that is ever dedicated to coordination, and the coordination is kind of expected to happen out of what agencies are already doing. And I thought that was, it's not something that was within the scope of our report to actually examine if that's true, but it certainly seemed to be consistent with the types of things that we looked at. And one of the suggestions that we made near one of the policy options, rather, that we threw out was perhaps that the state might consider investing a little bit more resources that is specifically directed toward coordination among state agencies.
Mr. Chairman, we're out of time, I believe. I would just like to say in closing, I think I would be remiss if I did not say that Bowser cooperated fully with us, and our recommendation should not in any way be taken as a negative reflection on the integrity of the people that work there, either the folks on the board, the staff. We made our recommendation without any reflection on personalities or politics. These are folks that are working hard at difficult and complicated and important tasks. We don't necessarily think that Bowser's broken, but we do think it could be made better. And because of the magnitude of the challenges that we face, we think it needs to be better. And we think that the recommendations that we make will make it better. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Thank you, staff. Any other questions? Okay, I'm going to just ask if there's anyone in the audience who had any opportunity for any comments. Yes.
My name is Mary O'Connor. I'm a Brooklyn Center Council member. I do think that there is a lot of disorganization among the many agencies that handle this. I think that the watershed commissions tend to spend a lot of money, and I think a lot of money is put for testing of water in Minnesota. And I think really if we just could stop polluting our creeks and our rivers and lakes, that it would clean up by itself. And I believe that Shingle Creek and Brooklyn Park, the watershed commission spent, I think, $450,000 on a small section of that creek to redirect a small falls and put growth of plants on either side of the creek, things that would happen, I think, on their own. So I guess I hate spending all this money on this. I think if we could just stop putting salt, reduce the amount of salt we put in creeks and rivers and lakes, and that it would heal itself. Thank you.
Okay. Any other comments? And just before you, we will be meeting a week from today at the same time in the same location. So, go ahead, say your name for the record.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm John Waller from Hugo, Minnesota. And my experience with the watershed districts have been that they need some accountability. I would agree with the legislative auditor's report. In fact, I think it's probably not strong enough language for the accountability on those issues. A few years ago, I remember a legislative grant that was given to the watershed district in Rice Creek's instance, and this had to do with our ditch, which rose through our property on our farm and home. And the watershed district was going to take our judicial ditch and make meanders into it and make it inefficient. And only by going to the legislative auditor's office were we able to have that money redirected where it was properly used. Now, my experience has been that these local boards are rather on their own. If you took a look at the internal policies that the watershed district board makes about how they have a strategic plan, you would find that in the case of Rice Creek, they don't even recognize the county boards in the table of organization as someone who appointed them or who they report to. You you'll also find that if you read it very carefully, they say that there is a conflict between the Wetland Conservation Act and the ditch law. And then they go on to say in parentheses that the legislature didn't understand what they were doing. So the board then has made a policy to take it upon themselves to correct the legislature to what their opinion is. So this has ended up in our district over 15 years in multiple lawsuits where citizens have had to come before the judicial system spending hundreds of thousands of dollars. In the case of JD2 in Washington County, $1.3 million has been spent by the watershed district defending themselves, and the city of Hugo has spent $750,000 in trying to work out an official profile and get some minor maintenance done to provide some drainage for the ditch. This is a lot of money. And these boards are very, very, very independent. Now, I don't see, as my experience been in government, which my only government job is in the Marine Corps, and I spent 4 years there, and believe me, we were audited a couple times a year, and there's communication up and down. So I would support the legislative auditor's report, and I would say that he was very polite on the way he put it. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you. Anyone else? I do hope members are okay. I gave a little extra time there in case there were members from the audience. And seeing no other business, I will adjourn the meeting. Thanks.